Ron Van Dam. He's got what the kids call mad skills, which he thought meant he was really good at being angry about everything. Well, live and learn. This is the Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
All right, just sit down, will you? Sit down.
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Just sit down and be quiet, and I will entertain you for half an hour. I know. What would you like to do for half an hour? Do you want to play Twister? Do you want to take our bodies and jumble them all up there on top of a mat with a lot of dots on the floor? Who wants to do that? You? Nah, cut it out. I love these adults that say, I want to go back to school. You know, they're like 30 years old. I want to go back to school. I mean, like, what? Are you been there, done that? Go do something else now. No, Ron, getting an education is very important no matter what age you are. Get out of here. You can tell I was never a PTA member or a member of a school committee. I think you figured that out, didn't you? It's not that I'm specifically against education. I'm just against a lot of stuff. Life is the learning experience. Sitting in the classroom with somebody standing at the front of the room telling you things is very different than going out and doing life itself. Do you understand what I'm saying? Are you comprehending? Am I speaking a different language? All right. Well, I guess if you're in another country, I'm speaking another language, so I guess so, yeah. All right, welcome to the show. I'm going to do something a little bit progressive, shall I say. If there are children in the room, I suggest you remove them, and not just because I'm doing the show, for your own sanity. Just remove them. But specifically for this show today, the subject matter is going to be a bit out of the ballpark for the children. For some adults, it may even be out of the ballpark. Why am I comparing this to a sporting event? I have no idea whatsoever. I want to talk about cursing. Oh my God, Ron, you're not going to do that, are you? Yeah, I am. Because nobody talks about this, and I am curious about it. Now, I could go to the Google machine, as I usually say, and look it up, and kind of get an idea based on other people's ridiculous opinions what this is really all about. But I'm not going to do that, because I find it more productive just to get it out of my system, kind of like a colonoscopy. And this is good for you, too. Let's just talk about this, but I'll do all the talking. Where did cursing come from? It's an incredible subject matter because I don't think there's an answer to this. When we get frustrated or we hit our fingers with a hammer by mistake or something like that, we mutter certain words. And they're standard words. We all mutter them. I don't do it as much. And I'll tell you, when I was growing up, my parents did not curse. They didn't curse to themselves. They didn't curse to us. They didn't curse at all. My father never cursed at my mother. My mother never cursed at him. Never at the kids. I had a brother. He didn't curse. I didn't curse. So I find that everybody that curses is bizarre to me. And when I hear a curse word, I go, What are you saying? Why did you do that? The English language is full of words that can express your innermost frustrations. Why do you just blurt out these single words that have nothing to do with what you're talking about? There are two words that people mutter when they're cursing, and they turn them into adjectives and nouns and all kinds of parts of the English language, sometimes even a verb. There are two of them. One begins with an F, and I call it, out of respect to those that don't like this subject matter, I call it the F word. There's four letters in these words. Curse words have four letters. It's just the way it is. I don't know why. It's just the way it is. Just accept it. The F word begins with an F, ends with a K. We've heard this before. People use it as an effing car, or this effing person, or I went into this effing place. I went to the effing restaurant yesterday and had an effing hot dogs with some effing beans and some effing French fries, effing French fries. They use the word constantly to the point where it really doesn't matter anymore. It doesn't show frustration. It just shows nothing. That F word, actually, by definition and by acceptance of its action, has to do with the some sexual type of art. The sexual act itself is actually what people use it for. But somehow, when you're frustrated, you blurt out the word of a sexual act. I don't get that. I thought it was a good thing to be effed. It's a nasty way of putting it, but that's what it means. I derive pleasure out of it, and I think my partner does. She told me she did once. So that F word thing is a pleasurable experience, really. Nasty word for it, but a pleasurable experience. See if you can follow me. Just pay attention. So why is it that when we're frustrated or hit our fingers with a hammer or fall down or something, why do we refer to a sexual act that's supposed to give us pleasure? It makes no sense at all. Now, there's another word that we use constantly, probably just as much, if not perhaps a little bit more. And that's the S word. There's four letters in that one, and it ends with a T. Now, this particular word refers to excrement. When you eat a lot of food or whatever, your body in a solid form passes excrement. Some people call it poop. That's the nasty, nice way of putting it. Poopy. That's poopy. We use this word also in the same vein. When something bad happens, we're talking about excrement. Now, that's a little bit more understandable because it has some vague meaning to something horrible. Nobody likes excrement, but I'll tell you something. If you didn't pass the poop, you'd be in big trouble. That's actually a very good function for the body. To S word. Some people use these words so frequently that they become just insignificant. But it does show, in my estimation, a complete lack of mastery of the English language. It also shows constant anger on the part of the person who's blurting out these words. You might be able to surmise this person has a nasty, angry personality because they use words in frustration and anger all the time. Cursing is not necessary to do. Some people make up their own words like, oh, poo-poo, or oh, my goodness, oh, my golly. which sounds just as stupid. I don't know. When I hit my finger with a hammer, I don't yell out one of these curse words that has anything to do with sexual acts or excrement. I say things like, "Ugh." That's what I say. In cartoons, they say, "Ouch." I don't think anybody really says "ouch" anymore. I think "ouch" is outdated. Oh my goodness. What an idiot I am. Boy, I'm stupid. I say things like that. Do they curse in other languages? Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do. They use their own words, which mean the same things as what our words mean, which is makes no sense at all either. When I hear somebody curse, my reaction is, what? Why did you say that? I was watching a movie last night on my television. It was on Netflix, and there was some woman on it who was a comedian, and every other word out of her mouth was F or S, mostly the F word there. She used it as an adjective, and when she did, the audience laughed, and I couldn't understand that. I could not understand. What is so funny about somebody using that word? Now, there is humor to angry people, but there are clean comedians that express their anger, and they're much more enjoyable because they spend more time talking about the funny stuff. See, throwing curse words into something doesn't make you manlier, doesn't make you more articulate, doesn't make you funny. It just, for your own purposes, shows a lack of control. The only way to solve this problem, and this is the only way, is not to curse around children. Because adults are already screwed. Which is, again, another adjective for a sexual act. What I said just makes no sense. Oh, you're in trouble. You're screwed. Oh. I thought that if I was screwed, that would be a pleasurable experience. Not understanding this language thing. Adults of this generation and beyond, older, I mean, you can't stop people from cursing. It's a habitual thing. But you can stop the next generation from doing that. The word is not taught in classrooms. It's not taught in English classes or in grammar classes, whatever you call those things. It is not taught there. It is not muttered. It is not said. It is not spelled out. So where do kids learn this kind of language? At home and from their quote-unquote friends. That's a learned thing by the environment, not in a classroom. So who do we blame for the curse words? You. Every time you curse from this day on, because I've enlightened you, stop for a second and say to yourself, what the hell did I use that word for? It does roll off the tongue very easily for many people because they use it so frequently. But just stop and think about what you're saying. You would sound so much more intelligent, so much more in command, if you used words that expressed your feelings at the time of anger or frustration that didn't include nouns and adjectives of sexual acts or excrement. I'm just saying. You know, I do this show for basically no reason whatsoever. But if there is a reason, and there isn't, it would be to talk about things that we all go through that make no sense. Do they need correction? Not necessarily. I'm just pointing them out. It's one of those lovely things in life. Going back to the comedian thing, I appreciate every single comedian that does not use curse words in their performances, because they're just pure funny. If you have to resort to four-letter curse words in order to make your point standing on stage, there are people that will laugh at that. Not the group I want to be in. Sorry, not the group I want to be in. I'd rather appreciate talent for what it is, not just the throwing out of four-letter words. And that's it. A lot of you are saying, Ron, come on, seriously? Yeah, seriously. It's important every once in a while to look at ourselves. Not in the mirror, that'll freak you out too much. But just listen to yourself talk. Listen to what you say. Listen to how angry you may be, how you may criticize everything, insult other people, etc. Just listen to your verbiage. It's interesting if you take the time to do that, because you can correct that. It's like a diet. Well, I don't have to eat raw meat every day. I can have other things, maybe some legumes or salad here and there. I don't know. I'm just saying. I want to open your eyes like an ophthalmologist. I want you to spread your wings like a bird. All right. I have some guests coming up today. We are inching closer to a situation where all the people on the planet are starting to piss me off. Now, here we go. People on the planet are pissing me off. Okay, that would mean that the people that I don't care for are peeing on me. Again, to some, a sexual act. A little weird, but I guess some people like that. That's a funny thing about sexual acts. Everything is acceptable, even if you're weird. It's not normal, but it's acceptable. Anyway, people piss me off. That means that they're peeing on me. That, again, is a body function. Fits the mold. But there, we're seeing something that might be a little bit more acceptable, because no one would like to be peed upon except for the people who enjoy it as a sexual act, as I said. But no one likes that. That's somebody else. It takes somebody else to pee on you. And that does show that people are doing things to you that you do not like. No one likes that act on them. So that might make some sense. So you can use that if you'd like. You know, I'm angry. I'm pissed off. No. You're pissed off. That means that you are doing the pissing. This is not working out either. When I get frustrated, I go to the bathroom and I pee. Because I'm pissed off. I got to get the piss out of it. This is just, you know, you really annoy the piss out of me. Oh, okay. Well, you're welcome then. I'm improving your urinary functions. You're welcome. All right, that's enough. All right, you can let the kids back in the room, I think. I'm not sure. Sometimes that's also ill-advised through the whole program. But anyway, then there's always this.
Hi, I'm Gary Filkington, founder, owner, and operator of Filkington Gender Warehouse in picturesque West Bridgewater. We've got genders for all occasions here, for sale, lease, or hourly rental. There's no need whatsoever for you to agonize over what gender floats your proverbial boat. You can choose from one or more of our selection of over 30,000 government-certified genders of the highest quality. Come on in and talk to one of our qualified gender specialists, or feel free to browse around in our vast three-story gender showroom. Whether you're a boy or a girl or a genuflecting peach pit or whatever, you're guaranteed to find a gender that'll show the world you're something special. And while you're here, if you gotta use the can, it's open season, baby. Go wherever your spirit takes you. Filkington Gender Warehouse is open weekdays till 8 p.m. and till 2 a.m. on Saturday for your late-night gender action. Surprise your friends, piss off your parents, get special treatment at your job with a brand new Filkington Gender, Filkington Gender Warehouse. We identify as being at 367 East, Route 43 in West Bridgewater, so maybe go there.
Christina Sauer joins us now. She's a National Geographic editor, National Geographic Kids, but well, with the same peeps. Thanks for being with us today. We're talking about the horse world. Horse stuff, we call it. Can't Get Enough Horse Stuff is the name of the book. Just when you think they've covered every possible subject, you come up with this. What did you find particularly fascinating about this?
Oh, Ron, this is one of my favorite books. This is that book that's perfect for that early reader, ages 7 to 10, who's fascinated by, exactly like you said, horses and many, many other animals. So in this book, I would say some of the most fascinating subjects relate to how horses communicate with us, whether it's how they show emotions and figuring out, okay, is the horse angry or fearful or calm, and what signs do they have, whether it's their ears are pinned back or their heads are up high, or maybe their eyelids are just droopy, they're drooling a little bit. Uh-huh. So kids get to understand what these horses are feeling and experiencing and how they can connect with them.
Wow. I know the kids get excited with the miniature ponies. It's almost like someone made a horse and said, let's do a really cute one. But they're not babies, are they?
No, and it's funny that you actually said it right. They are horses. Mm-hmm. Little did you know that ponies aren't a separate species of animal. Horses are categorized by their height, and whether they're a true horse is over 58 inches. If they're a pony, they're at or under 58. But if they're those cute, adorable mini horses, which honestly are one of my favorites,
They're
no more than 38 inches tall.
38 inch, that's it? 38 inches tall from an inch pony?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
Can you keep one in your home?
Can you imagine?
Can you have one in your bedroom?
You know, it's funny you say that. Some people do, and we even have a section about an incredible woman who goes to hospitals and brings miniature horses to patients to help them through any kind of treatment that they're going through.
That's crazy. Wow. Why the fascination with horses? I know that they were used for utilitarian purposes way back when, but somehow they became fascinating as beautiful specimens and pets even in some cases.
Yeah, they kind of became our friends. So we've been interacting with horses for thousands of years at this point. Whether, like you said, they were used for, you know, the Pony Express, deliver mail or get us by on transportation, or used for agriculture and other manual labor. As soon as we went through the Industrial Revolution, we didn't really need horses that much for powering our vehicles or transportation and things like that. So we started to see what else we could do with them. And we had this natural connection, which no one can really understand. And they kind of became our friends, traveling to and from, doing fun activities like dressage and dancing with them in events. So it's kind of taken new shape.
Yeah. Horses seem to be incredibly intelligent. You can train them to do stuff, and they can actually communicate with you. Is that something that's a little more than other animals?
Yeah, I would say that horses definitely have a communication or connection with humans that's pretty unique. And we see it, we talked a little bit about therapy earlier, but we see it a lot with therapy. And we talk about hippotherapy, where there's something about a horse's gait or their way of their walking or moving that simulates just like humans walking. And we'll see individuals who've never walked before, either someone with cerebral palsy or another disability, get on a horse and be able to build the core strength and connection and develop in a way that is almost if they could walk because of that horse.
Yeah.
We also see equine-assisted therapy, where if you're grooming or feeding a horse, it kind of translates to your own life. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, and a lot of kids don't understand that there are, they hear about wild horses, but I mean, it's the same. Like, we have domesticated dogs, and then there are some wild species that are totally different. Same with horses, I guess, right?
Yeah, so horses are one of the few animals that can be domesticated. Not every animal can be domesticated. Don't try to bring a tiger into your house.
No.
But we'll see, even today, there are still wild horses. There are places, we say in the book, in the U.S., there's about 86,000 Mustangs that are still living on public land that you can go see in the wild. And where I'm from, you can actually go and see them on the beach near Ocean City, Maryland.
Wow. What did you find to be the most fascinating, or one of the most fascinating facts about horses?
Oh my goodness. For me, I love learning about kind of the anatomy and behaviors of horses. I definitely, when I took the personality quiz, came out as a veterinarian. But in this one, I found out about that horses actually, like we were talking about emotions, they can get pretty lonely, and they love barn buddies. So if you have a horse that's feeling a little lonely or sad and there's no other horses around, you can just bring them a goat or a donkey or another animal, and they'll become fast friends.
As long as
they're not predators.
I gotcha. Wow. Do horses sleep standing up, or do they lie down?
They can lie down, but for the most part, they do sleep standing up.
Hmm.
And when I learned that, I was like, how do they do that? Could you imagine standing up and sleeping?
No.
But the truth is, they only sleep 1 to 3 hours.
Oh. A lot of napping. A lot of napping.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's true.
Are there such a thing as therapy horses?
Yes. We have horses that are trained specifically to be very conscious of an individual on their back. So they are not wild horses. They're not high-spirited. They even know and can sense when you're starting to fall off, and they will stop so that you don't.
It's always amazing to me how certain we ride certain animals and how they don't just like try to throw us off all the time.
Right. I think I would, I'd be like, I'm kind
of
tired of you.
Out of here. Get out of here. You know, it's fun for a couple of minutes. Now get off my back, which is actually a phrase that we use.
Yes. Okay. We do talk about that too. In the book, is how many phrases in the English language are horse related and what those mean, you know, like putting a cart before the horse or throwing off my back or
that's right. Yeah. Wow.
And kind of give kids context too.
Wow. Well, there's hundreds and thousands of things we can talk about, but, fortunately it's again, in the book, and, it's available everywhere. What's the full title of the book?
It's Can't Get Enough Horse Stuff.
There you go. And it's for a specific age group. Was it 7 to 10?
Much early elementary. It's great for those early readers.
Every time we talk, Christina, I always have to throw in, no, there are no age limits on these books. Not of any book in the series. I think enjoy it more than a child from 7 to 10 would. So, no.
Well, I love that because I enjoy these too.
Okay, all right. Just don't tell anybody. Okay. Is there a website, as there is for everything, where we can get more information?
Yeah, so basically anywhere where you get your favorite books, whether it is online or in bookstores, you can find this book. This one's going to be one of those that's hot off the shelves.
Perfect, perfect. Well, thank you so much for your time today. Always a pleasure speaking to you. Until the next time. All right, that'll do it for me today. That's certainly enough for one day. That's all I can take. How about you? Right, I know. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new program, but until that time arrives, I wish you peace.